On July 7th, 1881, Reverend Andrew Bonar of Glasgow, Scotland, began the last great journey of his life. More than 40 years before, he and his friend Robert Murray McShane were among a group of ministers who traveled to Palestine as missionaries to the Jews, and they were gone for a long period of time. In 1881, the same year in which President James A. Garfield was assassinated, the 71-year-old Bonar watched as the ship on which he was a passenger left Scotland behind and headed out to the open ocean. His destination was the United States of America. He would not return home until September 10th. Andrew Bonar traveled to the United States at the urging of D.L. Moody to preach at Moody's Northfield Conference in Massachusetts, a conference that took place not far from Harvard University. It was also the year in which Andrew Bonar would mark the 25th anniversary of the beginning of the work in Glasgow, his installation as the founding minister of that church. As such, it was then a pivotal year for the minister who, in spite of his advancing years, still felt well and continued to care for his congregation as it continued to grow in size. By the end of his ministry, there were more than 1,000 members in the church. Still, though he felt so well that it would not be until 1891 that an associate would be installed in the church to serve with him, Andrew Bonar was still able to read the calendar and to mark the rapid passing of the years. He was also able to look around him and find the ranks of his contemporaries steadily diminishing. Late in the decade, he could see such an effect in his own family. One of 11 children, Andrew Bonar could consider himself by 1891 as the only one of those children still surviving. On July 31st, 1889, he wrote in his diary concerning the death of his brother Horatius, "Certainly I have been expecting it, but when the reality comes, there is something of awe in it. The gates of the unseen have opened to take him in." Bonar considered the reunion of his older brother with all the family members and friends who had gone before, and he pondered the reason why he was still left behind. He felt in many ways no longer useful, but still reflected on the sovereign wisdom and providence of God, that even though he felt himself not useful, God evidently still had use for him. And so he wrote of a great encouragement he received at that time. He said, "Got great joy when reading Proverbs 23:16, as the word of the greater than Solomon addressed to us, preaching his gospel, 'My son, my reins shall rejoice when thy lips speak right things.'" Christ listening to our sermons. As 1891 yielded to 1892, the old minister grew increasingly frail and was sometimes unable to attend public worship. He could feel the limits of his lifespan approaching. and more he had his eyes on that gate of which he had written just a couple of years before. This evening, as we come to the close of this series of messages on the life of Andrew Bonar, we see him in the last phase of his journey. We see him reaching the unseen gate. It's well for us to ponder the reality that when Andrew Bonar died on the last day of 1892, the world was just then at the threshold of the age of electrical power. The electric light was still very much a novelty. The world was still 11 years from the invention of powered flight by air. It would be nearly 20 years before the only voyage of the Titanic. Queen Victoria, who had come to the throne of the United Kingdom in 1837, just a year before Andrew Bonar's ordination, was still the queen and would continue on the throne until 1901. She reigned for more than 60 years. The world that Andrew Bonar left at the end of 1892 would undergo a radical transformation in the years that would follow his death. World War I was 20 years in the future when Bonar died. But not only the world at large would be transformed, but so would the land of Bonar's nativity. During the 20th century, Scotland would lose its glorious Reformation heritage bit by bit, as there was one compromise after another with modernism. So that if Andrew Bonar were to return to Scotland now, he would not recognize the place spiritually. It is a reminder to us that each person is called to a specific place at a specific time for a specific task. There's one application we can take from the life of Andrew Bonar this evening. We are called to our time, to our place, for our task. We ought not to wish then that we could have lived at some previous time, or that we could do something other than what we have been called to do. Andrew Bonar was always conscious in the last years of his life of keeping his spiritual eyes ahead. Keeping his eyes on the prize that was before him. I remember hearing Dr. Bob Jones Jr. say something of the same thing when he said that when he had gotten to be an old man, he realized the truth of the joy of Christian living, that it's a wonderful thing to be a Christian and that there's always something better ahead. Bonar had his eyes on the prize. We read this evening in Philippians 3 of the Apostle Paul's testimony. The Apostle Paul could look back on his life and could identify many things he had done that brought him regret. How he had persecuted the church. How he had been responsible not only for the imprisonment but for the deaths of those who had served Jesus Christ. But Paul could not allow himself to be dragged down by those regrets. So he said that whatever regrets he had, he tried to keep all that in perspective. And forgetting those things, not in the sense of pretending that they didn't happen, but leaving them behind as one who had been called to serve the Lord and reaching forth for the things which were ahead, he was pressing toward the mark. using the illustration of a runner on a race course as he reviews all of the things that have already happened in the race. He then begins to focus on the tape. He begins to press toward that mark. Bonar knew that there was still work for him to do, else he would not still be alive in the Word. And he didn't want to miss the goal. When we follow him as he pressed toward that mark, we see his life in this final period in four distinct parts. The first of them is a Scotsman in America. Now, the crossing of the Atlantic in 1881 was by no means as arduous as it had been even a century before, when that crossing would take several weeks, maybe over a month. That wasn't as bad as it was in the time of the Pilgrims, when it would take sometimes 2 months or more to cross the Atlantic. Ships were a little better, a little faster. Navigation was more than the crude science that it had been. So there was a lot to be thankful for that you were traveling in 1881. And not at the time when John Adams crossed the Atlantic during the War for Independence to represent his country and our country in negotiations with the French. Even so, the ships of 1881 were nothing like the floating hotels in which people go cruising today. A few weeks ago, when we were in San Diego, it so happened we were there at the time that the cruise ship that you may have heard about, the Carnival Splendor, that was cruising well off San Diego, had suffered a fire in its engine room and had disabled the whole ship, so that the thousands of people who were on board spent several days without any hot water, and without much to eat in the way of food besides subsistence-level food. Well, we saw that ship after it had been brought into port, and it was still there when we were there at Thanksgiving, undergoing repairs. But my, what a thing it is. It is amazing to behold it. The ship on which Andrew Bonar traveled was nowhere near that kind of ship. Many people today, if they could consider the conditions of Bonar's journey to America, they would say, oh, that was rough going. That was very Spartan at best. And on top of that, Bonar was 71 years old. Not somebody in the 19th century who was considered as reaching what people today call the new 50. You've heard of that, haven't you? That the age of 70 is now the new 50, the age of 60 is now the new 40. I am in great shape, I can tell you that. But I would say it was probably the case that Bonar found his accommodations on the ship to be suitable, though he wrote little about how he attended to his daily needs. There's not much information about that. Once he arrived in the United States, he was impressed very quickly by the number of ministers that he met who had read his books, and in particular, his biography of McShane that he had written years before, because they said they had been blessed through the reading of that biography, and it had encouraged them in their work for Christ. As part of his journey in the United States, Andrew Bonar visited Northampton, Massachusetts. That was the scene of the ministry of Jonathan Edwards for 23 years during the 18th century. the scene of revival. It was also the place where David Brainerd was buried, the young man who died at the age of 29 after having been a missionary to the Indians. Bonar preached at the Northfield Conference that Moody had organized, and he preached there aware that he would never again, in all probability, have the opportunity to visit the United States. What he thought about, what he observed in the United States, he didn't really record. But finally, after all these travels, he took ship and returned home and got back to Glasgow on September 10th. And that leads me to the second part of this last phase of his life, what I call a celebration of grace. For it was on December 21st, a Wednesday evening of that year, it was the day of the winter solstice, we're soon approaching that day ourselves. That was a day that in Scotland would feature about 6 hours of daylight. The sun would come up around 9 o'clock in the morning, and would set about 3 to 3:15 in the afternoon. That's a very long night. Of course, in the summer, it's opposite, but in December, that would have been the case. And on that evening, the church that Andrew Bonar had served as minister organized a special service to commemorate the 25th anniversary of his installation there. And in that service, they praised God for His blessing on their minister's labors. He wrote of the occasion, "I tried to tell the story of the past 25 years and was followed by several of the office bearers. There was much that was fitted to draw forth wonder and praise. But little did some of them know when speaking in praise of the minister how he saw in himself and in his work a shallowness and meagerness in every grace that filled him with sorrow before God." That was always the way Bonar viewed his own work, as not being very good. He was happy that the Lord had been pleased to use him, but he always believed that the Lord used him in spite of his weakness and not because of any of his strengths. Still, in 1881, Bonar was not planning to retire, and the people of his church were hopeful he would not retire either. He resolved that he would continue on as the Lord gave him the strength to do so. So there was hardly a Lord's Day that went by when he was not engaged in preaching, not always in his own pulpit, sometimes in other churches in Scotland. During the following year, 1882, D.L. Moody visited Glasgow and preached there. And Bonar wrote of this visit in a particular way. He said, "Beyond question now, another wave of blessing has come. Mr. Moody's meetings are more than ever before full and overflowing. I hear of several of our people touched and hopefully changed." Then he wrote in April, "The last 2 evenings have been remarkable for Mr. Moody's meetings. Church crowded. The impression is great, more in the form of thirst than of alarm and deep sense of sin. These are solemn times." In June, he wrote again on the same subject of Moody's visit. "It seems to me plain that the Lord shows His sovereignty by making that man a vessel through which the converting power of God may be poured out on various classes of men. The drunkards have had their day of visitation, and many others of the working men especially. In fact, Bonar told of a man who had said to him that he had read one of Bonar's tracts, and that by it he had been brought to faith in Christ. And his testimony was that from that day, when he had been converted, from that day, he had never taken another drink. Now, there was an amusing incident that occurred during that summer of 1882 that gives you some sense of Bonar growing older. He wrote about this incident, and he said they were on holiday. He said, "Yesterday, there being no English service here, I undertook to give it, and accordingly reached the spot, Loctonhead, got into the pulpit, and essayed to read the first psalm. But, ah me, I had forgot my spectacles, and my eyeglass too. What was to be done? I therefore repeated the psalm, and then descended from the pulpit to the seat where my four daughters were sitting, piteously begging the use of Isabella's eyeglass. But alas, it gave me no help. And so after the prayer, I repeated a few verses of a chapter, which I contrived to find out correctly, and found out my text by a sort of instinct. It was all right now, for you know I do not use paper." He meant by that he did not rely upon notes at that time in his ministry. "Otherwise, what a fix. Have you ever had such an adventure in the pulpit?" So it's clear that as he reflected upon it, you could see the sense of humor that was in him as he contemplated that situation and wrote to his friend about it. But time was moving on. And so we come thirdly to consider a decade of bereavements. Now, you may remember in previous messages in this series, we considered some of the losses that he already experienced during his life. The death of his friend, Robert Murray McShane, when they were young men. The death of his son. And then the death of his wife. But other losses came to him during the 1880s. Some of them were ministerial colleagues whose voices fell silent. Others, like his brother-in-law, David Dixon, were family members. On the occasion of David Dixon's death, Bonar wrote, "It is blessed to be able to say, I know him who has the keys of death." And as he looked at the denomination in which he served, he was saddened as well to see the changes that were taking place there. Days for prayer and fasting were being abandoned. The general trend of doctrinal decline was continuing. And more as the years passed, Andrew Bonar felt himself alone. He looked around and wondered why it was he was still there. And that leads me, last of all, to a call to glory. By the middle of 1891, Andrew Bonar was 81 years old, and his strength was noticeably failing. That year, in June, the congregation elected David M. McIntyre as an associate for Dr. Bonar, the aim being that he would preach when Dr. Bonar was not able to do so. In July, Bonar's other brother, John, the other one who is still surviving, passed away. And so he wrote on that occasion, "I am now the only one left of our family. My father, mother, sisters 4, and brothers 6, all gone before me. I hope to meet them all in the kingdom. But meanwhile, it is very solemnizing to be left thus alone. Bonar speculated in his diary on the way in which he would like to die. He said, I shall preach on Sabbath, take the prayer meeting on Wednesday, and on Thursday night people will be going about saying, do you know that Dr. Bonar is dead? That is the way he envisioned himself coming to the end of his days. During the early part of 1892, D.L. Moody was again in Scotland, this time with Ira Sankey, and they were conducting meetings in the city of Edinburgh, meetings that Bonar was able on occasion to attend. On March 10th of that year, Bonar wrote, considerable movement under Moody and McNeil. We find also in our congregation, in our district, souls saved. The meeting today has been remarkable, especially the evening one when 4,000 persons filled the place and all seemed so attentive. Awake, awake, O arm of the Lord, is our cry. It was a most fascinating sight, that great multitude of people so eagerly listening to the word. This is the third great wave of revival in my life. It was always his desire to see the Lord exalted and to see people drawn unto him. As he had speculated, Andrew Bonar preached for the last time on December 25th, 1892. He attended the prayer meeting on Wednesday evening, December 28th. And on Thursday, he became ill. He didn't die on Thursday. He lingered until Saturday, the very last day of the year, when he called his family together. And there, around his bed, they worshipped the Lord together. And at the close of the evening, almost at the close of the year, Andrew Bonar died. He reached the unseen gate. He fell asleep in Jesus. So ended the last life of a trio of gospel ministers in Scotland in the 19th century. Most remarkable that each of those three men served 50 years or more in the ministry. I would dare say you would be hard-pressed to find three brothers of that nature who were together in the ministry, each for that length of time. Bonar's life was a testimony to the reality of saving grace. It was a testimony to the reality of Christ's work. For above all else in his ministry, Bonar was anxious that the people to whom he preached should see the Lord lifted up. He was known as a preacher of Christ. There were those who criticized Bonar because they felt he was not Calvinistic enough. How they would accuse him of that, I don't know. He was a thoroughgoing Calvinist. But he was also one who recognized that God works in various ways to advance his kingdom. And he saw in the ministry of D.L. Moody the demonstration of God's sovereign power in saving many, many souls. So he rejoiced in that and resolved to help in any way that he could. Traveling in his time was a greater challenge than traveling is today. But still, Bonar was around the countryside, visiting his people and preaching the word of the Lord. His life is a lesson in the power of God's grace. And I trust that as we come to the close of this series and we reflect on the faithfulness of God to His servant, that we would pray that in our time, God would raise up young men of the same caliber who would embark on the same kind of ministry of proclaiming Christ and making Him known, so that they may say in their time that they have witnessed three waves of revival blessing. That would be a wonderful thing to see one time. But oh, for the call of God to young men to take up the cause of the gospel of Jesus Christ and to resolve that the Savior whom Andrew Bonar served will continue to be served today and tomorrow and until our Lord Jesus comes again in all His glory.